Welcome to the Food, Family and Friends podcast, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. Now it's time to join your host, Vanessa Baxter.
Hi there and welcome to another episode of Food, Family and Friends. You're with Vanessa Baxter and I am here in the Podcast New Zealand studio, but I'm going to be talking to Adrian Scott, who I call Scotty. He is a chef over in Saigon in Vietnam, and he is about to share his story of how a young London boy ended up running a little bit of a District 2 restaurant empire in the heart of Saigon. I'll take what's good. Hey, Scotty.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, all right.
Did you cope with getting through the water on your motorbike this morning?
It wasn't so bad on my bike. It was the restaurant, actually.
Oh, no. Is it all right or not? Have you sandbagged or?
Yeah, we put them up last night. Last night was terrible. It flooded because the river's so high, it flooded from the river. And from the garden side, because the river flooded, the water came up through the drains. But then because we had heavy rain, it flooded from the other side.
Oh, my God.
So at 6 o'clock, we had flooding from the river. So we had sandbags that side. And then it was about 7:30. We had to rush everything the other side because we had water coming in the other side.
Oh, that sounds insane. I'm so sorry to hear that. I thought about it when I called you. I thought, oh, my gosh, I've been looking at the photos on Facebook of Saigon and these crazy floods. And then here I am speaking to the head chef of a restaurant sitting right on the river.
Yeah, it was quite interesting.
So, Scotty, obviously we're here recording a podcast and, you know, it was so fantastic to catch up with you again a couple of months ago when I was in Saigon. But we met each other so many years ago and it would be fantastic to just hear from you because I seem to have this memory when I first met you in Saigon. You'd just come out from London and I think you were planning to stay just a few months in Saigon, though I could be wrong. But you've obviously stayed a lot longer than you possibly anticipated. So just share with the listeners how you ended up in Saigon and how long you've been there.
It was actually I'd planned to do a year,
right?
Rather a few months, but I started off working in England. I was planning to actually go to Australia. I had my visa ready, everything, and then the owner's parents came into the restaurant and basically said that they needed it to the owner who I was working for and said they needed a chef in Vietnam. I'd travelled here already, so I knew Vietnam a little bit and loved the country just by travelling. So I thought, well, I'll take them up on the offer. So I contacted Anna and basically it all started from there. Literally within a month, I was in Saigon, and 9 years later, I'm still here. Basically,
wow. It's 9 years. Oh my goodness! So I met you nine years ago, of course, because I'd only just been in Saigon for a little time when you arrived, and now, of course, I've done another 4 years off the back of 5 years there. Another 4 years, I guess, in New Zealand. So you have been there a long time.
I have. I definitely. I mean, I think partly Anna and Lawson not letting me go, basically.
Awesome. So, Scotty, because the listeners obviously have not necessarily been to Saigon or lived there, and it would be gorgeous to hear your version of Mekong Merchant and the funny little cafe that you arrived to pretty much run and try to coordinate how the thriving business that it was getting, I guess you sort of had to grow Mekong Merchant, this funny little cafe in the middle of a funny little expat district and there were no other cafes around. And I mean, I'm not sure what mission, you know, Anna gave you, but from our perspective as the customers there, that was where we went every single day for lunch because it was the only place to go and it was comfortable and it was quirky and it was cool and they did pretty good coffee. And then you kind of came on the scene and things changed in a great way. Like, you didn't come in and change it and make it all Western. It just kind of changed and evolved along with your customers. So share a little bit of that journey from your perspective as being the incoming chef.
Yeah, well, obviously when I came in, they'd only just been open a year, I think it was, because they had a little cafe first, and then they opened it up into the restaurant that it is today. And yeah, basically, I came in and sort of just slowly started plodding away, trying to change the menus a little bit, changing the food a little bit, but also just looking at what customers wanted, you know, and slowly getting to know the customers, knowing what they wanted as food, and basically just, you know, slowly getting it bigger and bigger. I mean, it's now not the only little place in District 2, but, you know, there's a lot more, but we're still going, and we're still doing what we do. I mean, just day by day. I mean, I remember walking into the kitchen and thinking, oh my God, what have I actually let myself into here?
That's what I wondered, because we saw you. We came in, I remember coming in with the girls probably, or with the family on the weekend, and seeing this white boy in the kitchen thinking, I wonder if he had any idea what he was coming to, because the kitchen was just crazy. I don't even think the floor was level.
No, it wasn't really. It was quite a crazy kitchen. We had the juice bar. Remember the juice bar area, which was all open?
Yes, correct. With a domestic blender.
Yes, domestic blender and domestic fridges and all sorts of things. And the kitchen wasn't much different. We didn't have any tiles on the floors or anything. We had it was a typical Vietnamese kitchen, basically. No big cold room stores or anything. And yeah, I remember walking in and thinking, Christ, this is not quite what I was expecting. But, you know, I dug down and got on with it, and sort of slowly I got sort of what I wanted in the kitchen. You know, slowly we changed things around. Slowly I taught the staff, you know. The staff were great, but it was just that usual thing. They'd never really worked under anybody. So, you know, it's getting them to understand the way that I was used to preparing food and how you prepare food. And you don't do this. You use separate chopping boards. You rotate your food stock. You don't put new things on top of old things. And, you know, just slowly, I mean, it was definitely an eye-opener. I think on about 3 months of being in, I think I was ready to go home. Something in me told me to stick it out and keep on going and just push myself even more. And, you know, it's slowly, bit by bit, it just sort of just started working.
And from our perspective as customers, we could see the changes, but they weren't dramatic, and they didn't affect us as customers, which was awesome, because we were still felt that we were coming to our favourite little place to eat, which was important for us. But it was very nice to also know that there were possibly some standards, because, of course, the fare started from just some maybe 3 or 4 items on the menu, and as the menu grew, it was good for us to know that there might at least be some decent health and safety standards at the back there, and, you know, cross-contamination and stuff. It was nice to know to be able to go there and have a meal that was gorgeous, and also to know that it was safe. And that's why I think so many families were happy to go and eat there on the weekend, for the same reason.
Yeah, I think this was it. And also, I think me sticking with the actual fact that we made everything in house, we didn't buy anything in, it was also creating a taste for people who wanted to eat proper food, not eating the normal packet, you know, normal packaging mayonnaises and things that you can get quite everywhere. You know, I sort of took pride in sort of teaching the staff how to do things from the basics, because we had a very basic kitchen. So teaching them from very, very basic stuff, you know, and teaching them how to make things properly, you know, by hand, by making all the sauces, all the stocks, everything. And I think this paid off with all the customers knowing, like you're saying, one, they knew that you were getting proper hygiene, but also I think a standard of food quality. But also, like you said, I didn't want to change things dramatically. And also going out and talking to customers, I sort of got an idea of what people wanted. And they still wanted that relaxed, homely style of food, nothing over the top, but also good salads, good sort of sandwiches, you know, but also, you know, doing little different things, you know, and It's been a great journey, to tell you the truth.
I can imagine. And those chefs that you originally worked with, or cooks probably, I would imagine they actually were in the kitchen. Did you retain some of them? Because it's very difficult, as you said, for any new chef to walk into a commercial kitchen and sort of, you know, come in over and above the people who've been there before. Not only were you doing that, but you were way out of probably your depth to start with the cultural differences, let alone trying to run a kitchen for people that were just cooks and had always been used to doing it their way. So did you retain some of those original staff, and did they realise that they were just gaining so much from you?
Yeah, I've been actually really lucky. I think I've still got six of the original staff working for me. Obviously, the team has grown as we've got bigger, because we are now open. You know, we're always open, but we make our own bread, so we have our own bakery and things. So the team has grown from around nine chefs. We've now doubled, and we're on about 15 chefs now. But six of those chefs I've actually still got working for me in the kitchen, which for me is quite a great thing, knowing that they're still with me, but also they're still very happy with me, and they've moved with me. Basically now they are the head chef, the sous chef, the chef de parties. They're running the kitchens with me now. As I've grown with them, they've grown with me, and we're still just a great team. But also they know me con merchant as well, which is great, because it's helped. This is one thing which has helped me keep my consistency over the years, because they know exactly what I want and how I want things to be.
I mean, it's a great credit to you, Scotty, because even when I came back 2 months ago, I know that the restaurant manager, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Bao, is that correct?
Tun.
He had been there for 10 years and was only just about to depart after 10 years. So, I mean, that's a great credit to you and to the owners, of course, that the staff have been committed and stay, because there's so many opportunities in Saigon. You know, it could be one of those places where the turnover, if you weren't doing it correctly and culturally sensitively and giving them the opportunity for growth, they'd just go next door.
I mean, I saw it. I see it with my other friends. I mean, even though they do the same thing, but they have people coming and going and coming and going. And here you have to be careful in Saigon, because people, the chefs, they tend to just go to somewhere for a few months and then get the name underneath their belt and move on. You just have to create an environment in the kitchen that they feel comfortable working for you, but also, you know, they work hard, they keep pushing. You know, there's certain lines you can cross with how you deal with Vietnamese. You can't be too harsh with them, because I find, you know, they can lose face quite easily, you know. And if you start shouting and ranting and raving in the kitchen, they don't want to know, and then they just laugh at you, and then they'll walk. They just don't want to be there. So you have to be really, really, really careful. I was lucky when I was being brought up, being taught by my chef. I mean, he wasn't a big shouting chef. He didn't, he was a typical chef, but he didn't shout at me. And, you know, like some of the chef stories that you can actually hear. So I think that rubbed off on me. The way that he taught me is how I actually then spoke and taught them, because that's how I wanted to be treated. And I feel that they understood that I was there to actually teach them, not to do anything else, you know, not to be nasty, not to be there. And if I did get a little bit angry sometimes, it was because I knew that they could do better. And they actually knew that. And like I said, they're still all there. They're still all with us. And the ones who have left us have gone off to better places.
And you can be proud of that as well. And because that's the wonderful thing, isn't it? If you see people outgrow you and be able to move on, then you can be proud of that achievement as well, in that giving them that option that they may not have had they not worked for you in the first place.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, it's great, because some of the people that were with me from the start, the only reason, one of the reasons why they actually left is because they wanted a higher position. And I couldn't actually, I've got my sort of like chefs in all these positions, and I couldn't move them up to a higher position. Although I would have loved to have kept them, they, you know, they, they needed to move on, which was a shame because I would have loved to have kept them with me. But, you know, there's only so many people that you can have as head chef or have as your sous chef. You know, you can't start having two head chefs and different things. It doesn't really work in the kitchen.
No, I'm sure. So, Scotty, from Mekong Merchant, which is not actually where we're podcasting from today. You're at the other restaurant, which is The Deck, which then quickly became another favourite of mine, obviously, when I lived in Saigon. So for the listeners, these two restaurants are in District 2, which is a well-known expat neighbourhood in Saigon, and just a quick taxi ride from District 1 if you're travelling to Ho Chi Minh City. But The Deck is the one that's actually right on the river, and it's really a very, very special restaurant. And this is a restaurant that you've been able to really personalise, haven't you, Scotty, and really inject some of yourself into. And this is a much more fine dining, relaxed fine dining restaurant and a real fusion food. So tell us a little bit about the menu, because I personally absolutely love it. So just share with the listeners a little bit about The Deck.
Yeah, so The Deck now has actually been 8 years. It was 8 years in August that we actually started. It's actually grown now. We've actually doubled the capacity. And it's been a great journey also, like Mekong Merchant. The food, like you're saying, is more of like a fusion type sort of cuisine. We're taking basically Asian flavors and doing it in more of a westernized creation. This has taken a little bit of time for me as I had to learn more about Asian food. Obviously, living in Vietnam helped a lot. Basically, you know, as I was first taught, I was taught English style country house hotel restaurants. And then when you start to actually start using soy based food, teriyakis, fish sauce, you know, it's not easy to get the quantities right. So it's been an interesting learning curve for me as well for the whole journey. We try and have a little bit of a sharing concept going on with the food. Things come out easily for people to be able to put in the middle of the table. People can pick at different things. You know, we have lots of different things. Like I suppose we have a chicken and foie gras shumai with a teriyaki sauce. This is one of my personal favorites. You know, it's taken French cuisine, foie gras, putting it into a shumai, adding a little bit of Japanese influence into there. You know, it's sort of just looking at different things. You know, we do another dish, which is also one of my personal favorites, which we've done the take off the Vietnamese banh canh. And actually, I think this is what, while you were here, I think we showed you how to make this, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we did. We did fresh tuna with baby rocket.
Oh, was it the tuna spring rolls? Not the foie gras spring rolls?
No, we did the fresh tuna with rocket, which I've stolen completely. I'm going to have to tell you, but you're so far away, you can't do anything about it. But for the for some of the team building things that I've been doing, I've been using whatever is sashimi quality fresh fish here from my fishmonger in Auckland, and I've been wrapping it in the rice paper with rocket, and people have been going absolutely crazy for it. And I'm smiling quietly to myself and thinking, thank goodness Chef Scotty's too far away to know I've pinched his idea.
That's not a problem. This is the thing about cooking. You see ideas, and you know you can take little bits from different people. It's part of the learning curve of being a chef.
I think that it's really interesting though that you are playing around with the Vietnamese dishes, because it must be tricky. And I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this. When I was in Saigon and working there myself, and when I was teaching and running one of the Smart Kids operations for the schools, I had cooks working for me, and most of them would not share their recipes. I happen to have a really gorgeous lady, Miss Lau, who was prepared to share some of her family recipes with me. But in general, they were quite loath to share recipes because I think they felt that that was their difference and their uniqueness was within their family recipe, and that if they shared it, they were giving up something that was themselves. The other thing I noticed, Scotty, was that they didn't really like to play with their food. So, you know, spring rolls always have pork and prawn, and you always boil the pork and you always boil the prawns, and that's it. You know, oh no, you shouldn't roast the meat to put it in. And so I'm sure it has been an interesting process for you to work with Vietnamese staff in the kitchen and to convince them that it's okay to actually fuse or play with some of their traditional recipes.
Well, some of them are still, they do look a little bit bemused when we do some of these dishes. I've actually been very, very lucky. With my chef who works with me, he is very open-minded. He's worked in some top places. He was trained in the Sofitel here in Saigon. He's worked overseas. So he's actually got a little bit of an open mind when it comes to these things. So actually talking to him about things, it wasn't as difficult. And also with getting help with Vietnamese cuisine, with certain recipes and how to use fish sauce and different things, he's actually been a very big help for me. As when creating dishes, you know, I'd come in with these ideas and like, right, okay, I want to do this and I want to do that. At first, you might think it's a little bit weird, but actually he took it on very well and was like, right, okay, I want this type. I ate this spring roll in thinking I want the same rice paper. I want the same of this. And he sort of helped me get all the ingredients that I needed, and then we started just playing around with ideas, and it's actually been great fun. And he's been with me since the start as well, which has been absolutely fantastic because we've both come along together. I mean, even now he is actually coming up with some of these ideas. He's like, can we try this idea out, and can we try that idea out soon, you know. And it's quite amazing how far we've come together and what we've achieved in this restaurant, you know, by both of us coming from two different backgrounds, coming together, me not really working with Asian food, him working with a lot of Vietnamese food. I mean, some of the restaurants where he worked abroad, it was Vietnamese food, but obviously with the Sofitel training, he got a little bit of a French background in there and a bit more westernized things. And, you know, just sitting there, you know, trying out different things. I mean, the trials and the fails and everything that we've had, I mean, it's been massive.
That's what people don't realize, isn't it? Is those trials and fails before you actually get, like, I think that as customers, often we have the impression you go, oh yes, fresh tuna and rocking in spring roll. Oh, of course, you know, perfect, easy. But I'm sure, you know, with most of your dishes, you've tried all sorts of things before you come up with the ones that actually tick the box and end up on the menu.
Oh yeah. I mean, completely. I mean, sometimes it's so annoying because you've got the idea in your head and you've got the flavor sort of like running around in your mouth and you know what you want, but you just can't get it sometimes, you know. You try and you throw this away and you throw that away and you make this dish and, you know, and then when you finally actually think you've got it right, you give it to somebody to try and then they don't like it. And
you're like, it's so frustrating.
Again. Okay.
Now, Scotty, you've obviously made your life in Saigon now. And when I was up there, you had a little baby. So that was very exciting. But you said that it's a little boy. Am I correct?
Yes.
And
little boy, yes.
What's his name?
Zach Kai.
So, Zach, you said you were dropping him into care this morning. So how old is Zach now?
He's actually only 19 months. So he's not very old, but just to give mum a little bit of a break, we've just started taking him to, like, little play school.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's also good for him because he's getting to actually socialise with other children. It was a little bit hard for him in the first couple of weeks, but now he wants to go. As soon as you put him down, he now runs off to some of the kids and, you know, straight away he goes and sits in his seat because he has his little seat when they arrive in the morning. And yeah, he's suddenly from being a kid who'd screamed and cried and didn't want us to leave to actually, as soon as we get there, he runs away from us now. So that's been quite an interesting little...
Yeah, it's interesting as a parent to see that too, isn't it? And you adopted Zach, so he probably, you know, he's had a lot going on in 19 months in his little life. So I think it's fair enough that he takes a little while to settle into new situations.
Yeah, definitely. I've been quite surprised actually, because when we first adopted him, just the way that he took to us I was quite amazed. I was expecting, as you know, some Vietnamese children, when they've just been with Vietnamese, they tend to just cry when a Westerner comes near them. I didn't experience any of this at all with him. I think deep down he just knew that I was going to be his dad, because the first time I picked him up, we had a bond, and it was the most amazing feeling I have ever had in my life. Just couldn't believe the feeling that I was getting from this little boy, you know.
I'm sure he feels exactly the same way, Scotty. So, you know, I'm sure you both bring joy to each other and his mum as well. So, and I'm sure, look, you know, you have been there for 9 years and you have been working with and alongside Vietnamese. So, you know, yes, you're a Westerner, but you're also incredibly culturally sensitive now and well aware of, you know, how Vietnam works. So I'm sure, you know, if you were someone who just landed off a plane and walked into the orphanage, I'm sure it would be a very different feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely. And like you said, yeah, it does take a little bit of getting used to the cultural side and how people are and how things work, because things just don't work the same. sometimes actually for the better, sometimes not for the better, but you sort of you grow to get used to all of it. And actually, I think that's what makes the country. I think that's what I fell in love with about the country of being here, that whole difference in cultural. I mean the Vietnamese, they're actually, for me, they're such kind, friendly of friendly people. I've had so much luck with Vietnamese, the way that they've taken me into their country, the way that they are with me. I mean, one with my staff, another with my wife's family. With my wife's family, this massive difference in, obviously, language. Even though I've been here 9 years, my Vietnamese is absolutely terrible.
It's not easy, is it?
No, I actually do feel a little bit ashamed about what my Vietnamese is like after being here for 9 years.
Never mind.
But my wife sort of actually gave up on me. She tried for a while, but yeah, she sort of gave up with trying to teach me in the end. But yeah, I mean, that the language barrier with her family is very difficult. But every time I go to visit her family make me feel so welcome. You know, it's almost too much. You know, they're sort of like trying to do too much, and I was like, yeah, I don't mind that. I have to sit on the floor sometimes, and I have to do, you know, and you know, you they're living in a little shack somewhere or whatever, when you go to visit somebody and their family's in the countryside, and you know, and you have to, the only way to get to their house is over the river by a boat. It's quite an experience.
It is. It's also all an adventure, isn't it? I think that's the, and you're right, it's an adventure in a crazy place, but at the end of each little adventure there's the most welcoming people, and that's exactly what I found, Scotty, and that's why I consistently rave about Vietnam, because for a country that was so at war or constantly being, you know, run by other countries, what an amazing sort of group of people overall in a country. How beautiful and welcoming, and they don't hold a grudge, and they just want you to love Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they're very proud of their country, and they're very proud people. And like you said, they just want you to like Vietnam. And, you know, for all of the craziness and the streets and the floods and, you know, one, the driving. It's just something to just, you go and you tell these stories to people and people are like, really? Really? And it just makes you, the whole thing makes you smile. When you actually sit back and look at everything, it's just, you sort of sit there and like, wow, that's crazy. But actually, you know, I mean, I couldn't imagine some of the stuff, you know, people driving down the wrong way at you on the streets, you know, coming at you. If that happened in England, the people would either pull over and get out of the car and start screaming and shouting at you or whatever, you know. It's just here, it's normal.
Now, can I ask you a question? Do you drive down the street the wrong way when you need to or when you perceive you need to?
I have done, yes.
Yes, so have I. Go ahead.
And I try not to because I moan at everybody for doing it, but sometimes you're in that situation and it's just like, I can go up there, down there, do this, do that, or I can just nip 2 seconds across like that through the road. Actually, I'm just
going to
do it.
Yes. So, Scotty, I used to do that to take my son to tennis. I used to go on the motorway the wrong way on my motorbike on the slip road, unless there were police there, in which case I'd get off the motorbike and walk because that was acceptable.
Yeah.
And then get back on the moment you've gone past the police, you'd get back on because otherwise I had to go for miles and I was too scared to go on the actual motorway. So I thought it was actually better to go the wrong way down the slip road on the side of the motorway. On reflection, how insane is that?
I know, it's mad. But like you're also saying, it's crazy because the police see you coming, but as long as you get off the bike and walk past them, you know, you walk 50 metres away from them and then you get back on your bike and go. I mean, they're quite happy for you to do that. That's also the craziness about it, you know. It's one of these things that just people just do not realize. Just imagine doing that in New Zealand.
I know. You can't. So back onto food, Scotty, and to finish up, I'm going to give you some either-or questions here, your personal preferences on a couple of things. You just let me know which one is the first thing that comes to your mind as your preference. So coffee or tea?
Tea.
Lamb or beef?
Beef.
Banh mi or pho?
Pho.
Bun xiao or bun cha?
Bun xiao.
Pie or ploughman's platter?
Pie.
Mash or chips?
Mash.
A red or a white wine?
Red wine.
A soft French cheese or a hard British cheddar?
Soft French cheese.
Did you like my mixing of the British and the Vietnamese questions there?
Yeah, I know. I was a bit like, I should be saying hard British cheese now.
Exactly. Brexit. Hey, Scotty, do you have any cookbooks and do you have a favourite?
I have a few, actually. Not many. Actually, I'm really bad because if I do need any cookbooks, when I do look at things, I actually steal all Anna's, my boss. Yeah, she has like a library. But cookbooks. I do like Rick Stein.
I like Rick Stein too.
For a chef, I love his style. I still have it to today. The first ever cookbook I got was given to me by my chef, who was trained under Rick Stein, and he gave me a Rick Stein cookbook. And I still think this book is fantastic. So yeah, there's a few crab dishes I've done sort of at Mekong Merchant, which have actually come from Rick Stein.
Oh, very good. Awesome. Hey, Scotty, it was so gorgeous to talk to you. Thank you so much for agreeing to set this up and getting through floods and dropping Zach at school and everything so that we could touch base at a reasonable hour for both of us. It will be amazing. And I think the listeners will love hearing your stories, about running kitchens in general, let alone in another culture, and our little snippets of info about visiting Vietnam. So obviously, if anyone wants to find you, they can find you at Mekong Merchant or at the deck in District 2 in Saigon, because you'll be somewhere hanging around there, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm not going that far. And I think I'll be here for a few more years, definitely, without any fail. Well, if it's anything with Anna and Lawson, I don't think they're going to let me. I think they're going to bolt my leg down if I say I'm going to go.
Yeah, it sounds like you're part of the furniture.
I don't want to go anywhere, actually. I'm quite happy.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. And you can hear it in your voice when you're talking. You talk with passion about food and about Vietnam. So a man of my heart, Scotty, I feel exactly the same way. So it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
No, it's been good fun. It's been great fun.
Thank you so much. Wow, I love chatting with Scotty, and I hope you really enjoyed listening too. Sorry if the sound quality was not up to our usual standard, but it's pretty difficult when we're doing Skype calls between a country like Vietnam and New Zealand. And in the midst of flooding and difficulty with networks, it was amazing that we even managed to connect. So I hope that you enjoyed the journey that we took you on with our chat today. Thank you so much to Podcast New Zealand. Thanks to World Podcast for all your support in this journey, which for me is so personal, and I'm really loving sharing my connection with people through our passion for food with you guys, the listeners. So thanks for bearing with us and for continuing to log into iTunes and download our podcast. It's really fantastic to know that you're on board. Take care. See you next week.